This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 2 and 3 o'clock. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be talking about the news that Leeds could be potentially taken over, as well as the fact that Stoke might have a new manager in the form of Michael O'Neill. We'll also be focusing on Brentford, Swansea and Nottingham Forest to come later in the hour. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon here on the Championship Fan Show. One managerial story is the news that Stoke, who are right down the bottom, they've made an official approach for Northern Ireland manager Michael O'Neill. They are seeking a successor to Nathan Jones, who was sacked on the 1st of November after just 9 months in charge. Michael O'Neill has been the Northern Ireland boss for 8 years, leading them to the Euro 2016 finals. It is believed Stoke are negotiating with the Irish FA over how much compensation would have to be paid. On Thursday, the Irish FA confirmed Stoke had sought permission to speak to O'Neill. If you remember, Stoke had asked to talk to Alex Neil from Preston, but the request was turned down. So interesting to see how that develops. I think Michael O'Neill's done a terrific job at Northern Ireland. Does he feel this is the right time now to go back into club management? He spent a lot of time being an international manager with Northern Ireland for 8 years, but is now the time for him to do that? Interesting fact of the day for you. I mentioned how in the last hour, your fact of the day was Raju van der Parra is Georginio Wijnaldum's half-brother. I mean, obviously, Martin O'Neill isn't the Republic of Ireland manager, but it was a rather strange situation that the Republic of Ireland manager was called Martin Michael O'Neill and the Northern Ireland manager was called Michael Martin O'Neill. So it's all rather strange. There's another fact for you. You learn something new every day, and there's your fact for the day. So Michael O'Neill could be becoming the new Stoke manager. Obviously, they sacked Nathan Jones on the 1st of this month, and a week on, could they be on the verge of appointing the Northern Ireland boss Michael O'Neill as their permanent manager? Certainly got a big job to do with Stoke sat bottom of the table. Also, another interesting line coming out of Leeds. We brought you the news a few weeks ago that there were potentially some... originally we were told by Andrea Ratrizzani, the Leeds owner, that there had been a whole host of bids and they were considering three. And then he actually came out 24 hours later and said, oh, no, this is all just hypothetical. There are no bids on the table. But if there were to be some bids, then this is what we would do. An interesting read in the Times from Martin Ziegler today is saying that Ratrizzani has travelled to Paris. He travelled to Paris last night for further talks on a takeover by Qatar. So he was at Paris Saint-Germain's Champions League match against Club Brugge, where they won 1-0 to qualify for the knockout stages, as a guest of Nasser Al-Khelaifi, who is the PSG president. They know each other pretty well, who also runs the state-owned Qatar Sports Investment. Now, this was one of the groups that was rumoured to be having put a bid on the table for Leeds a number of weeks ago. Sources in France have said that the pair plan to have more discussions on QSI, Qatar Sports Investment, investing in Leeds. They are interested to view Leeds as a potential long-term project, and that even if only a minority stake is bought initially, it would be with a view to owning the club outright. Now, UEFA's rules prevent teams with the same ultimate owner meeting in its competitions, but it is likely to be several years at least before Leeds would be within a chance of competing against PSG in the Champions League. So that's one of potentially the stumbling blocks, not necessarily initially, but potentially down the line. That, for example, you remember the time in the last 12 or 18 months surrounding Leipzig and Salzburg being both owned by Red Bull, and they managed to find a way around it despite the fact that it's quite clear both of them are owned by Red Bull. You can't play a team that's owned by the same person. So, for example, Watford and Udinese couldn't play because of the Pozzo family. So there are some complications with that. As I mentioned, Al-Khelaifi is a close friend of Ratrizzani from when the Italian ran the sports marketing agency MP & Silver. apparently he's considering two other offers, and a QSI value leads between 50 and 70 million pounds. So we brought you that news a few weeks ago that was about there were some bids on the table and they were considering it. Then Radrizzani had said, no, that's not true. That was all hypothetical. But maybe it's starting to just develop a little bit. I'm sure Leeds fans would be pretty happy if there was a significant investment from the Qatar Sports Investment Group. But one thing that they do need to consider, obviously, it wouldn't be an immediate threat at all because Leeds are in the Championship. The fact that the prospects of them playing in the Champions League against PSG is looking very, very slim at this moment in time. But potentially something long-term, if this were to happen, about not being able to play a club that's obviously owned by the same owner. So potentially Leeds could be engaging in talks over a takeover by the Qatar Sports Investment, which is run by Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the PSG president. So maybe new ownership is in store for Leeds. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp. We're going to be talking a little bit about Swansea later now, also a bit on Nottingham Forest. But up next, we'll be talking all things Brentford.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Brentford now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Billy the Bee Grant from Besotted Pride of West London podcast and the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Billy. Looking back at last weekend, a disappointing defeat, 1-0 at home against Huddersfield, who are having a bit of a bounce on a new manager, Danny Cowley. It put an end to a 3-win streak. How much frustration was there at Griffin Park on the weekend?
There was loads of frustration on Saturday. You know, it's one of those games, to be quite honest with you. I mean, we'd obviously come off the back of three fantastic wins. You know, obviously Millwall, we looked down and out. 84th minute, and then all of a sudden we sort of turned it around, got a win there. And then Swansea, we didn't expect to get anything from Swansea because they've been riding high in the league, but we did a fantastic job and we beat them. And then, like I said to you, the QPR game was just like, that just really top it off. So when we went to against Huddersfield at home, who obviously Huddersfield weren't doing particularly well at the start of the season, we were on a high. We thought we were at home. We turned things around, but also we were sort of kind of a little bit nervous because the Cowley brothers, their reputation goes before them for being, you know, good managers, good organisers. And they obviously come to that game as well. Second in the form chart. We were top, they were second. And so we knew it was going to be tough, but I thought our previous games and also the fact we turned it around, we thought we would actually be able to get through. But what happened with Huddersfield is something that seems to happen quite a lot with us. You get a team who learns to stop how to playing football, you know, puts a lots of players in defence. They defended magnificently, fair play to Huddersfield. We weren't able to break them down and they didn't allow us to get Ollie Watkins on the ball and Mbeumo on the ball, and Benrahma didn't have a great game, so it was very frustrating.
It was interesting to read some of Thomas Frank's comments after the game. He did say that it wasn't the main reason why Brentford lost, but the referee, he felt, didn't help Brentford. That he felt that the referees must be much stronger in dealing with some of the elements of disrupting play that we see. I'm not saying that we will never do that, but you have to ask what kind of game we want. Do you think that was a fair assessment, or was that a little bit, and obviously you're a Brentford fan, Billy, but was that a bit of maybe sour grapes of losing the game, or was there a genuine argument to say the referee could have done a better job?
I mean, the referee wasn't great, but we see a lot of really poor referees in this league, and I think this is what he's referring to. I mean, it's quite interesting because we actually had Thomas Frank down the pub on Monday. I mean, we do our regular Besotted Pride of West London podcast, which you can check on prideofwest.london as well. Every week, we do them down the pub, and I met Thomas quite a few months ago, and he said, look, I fancy going on your podcast. So he said, all right then. So we said, we do it down the pub. You've got to come down to our manor. We're not going up to the training ground. So he did. So he came down the pub on Monday and he talked about that exact same thing on the podcast. It's actually out live now, like I said, on prideofwest.london. But he said, I'm very disappointed with the referee. He goes, Huddersfield were cheating after 2 minutes. Not cheating, sorry, he didn't say that. He said, Huddersfield were time-wasting after 2 minutes. And he said, you know, so, okay, you know, every team tries to get a little advantage, but from the second minute, he goes, that's a bit ridiculous. And also, the referee didn't really help things because there were certain situations where they were doing things to stop the game, niggly little fouls and other things, which the referee didn't sort of kind of put a hold on because he said that, you know, maybe if he arrested them, maybe if they had booked a couple of people for fouls, which he felt were fouls, but shouldn't have been early on, which were very cynical, then it would have been a different game. So I hear exactly what he's saying. I mean, where Thomas is coming from, who wants to play football, he used the phrase to save this beautiful game. So let's see Brentford play a particular type of football. It's a passing game type of football, and that's all we play. Some people turn around and say, well, you need to try and mix and match it up a little. Play a bit of passing game, play a little bit of tough ball. But he's trying to say, you know, why should we have to do that? We should be able to play football. Well, that's what the game's all about. And the referee is a person who's been given the power to make sure these things don't happen. So I hear what you're saying.
You mentioned, obviously, Thomas Frank, who you had on your Besotted podcast, which, as you said, you can hear on prideofwest.london. And we've got a bit of that. Frank talking about unfashionable teams and how bigger teams expect to beat these teams ahead of, obviously, your game against Wigan this Saturday.
Of course, we sometimes use the crowd or the history of the other club or the pressure they're under for whatever reason. I would say when you go to Leeds, it's we don't have to say anything because the crowd in the stadium is you know just amazing. So they will always be on it, and we actually have not a quite good record in terms of winning up there, but in terms of performing up there, we've done quite well. I will say. Against Wigan, we know it's going to be an unbelievable tough game. I think they done quite well. They will say, oh, but we're in the bottom half. But I watched some of their games. I think they played against Bristol City. They should have won then. That one, 100%. Watched the game against Swansea. They should have won that as well. So they're a very difficult side to play against. In terms of they play different they have different variation in terms of breaking teams down. They can actually have 15-20 passes in a team, but they can also play very direct up to Kiefer Moore. So it's going to be a good challenge, and we know they're very good on set pieces.
I wanted to ask you, Billy, about kind of the access to a manager, because for a lot of Premier League clubs and Premier League podcasts, this just wouldn't be possible. But how great is it to be able to sit down with the Brentford manager and just talk through a number of different things on a wide variety of topics? Just how kind of impressive did he come across to you, and how great is it that you have that type of an access to the manager?
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously it's fantastic, and I think Brentford's a different type of club. I mean, we're very lucky because we've been going for quite a while. You know, we didn't start yesterday. We started, you know, in the early 90s, you know, and we started off, you know, interviewing players, you know, sort of pulling them out of the game and pulling them down the pub to interview them, you know, and the club wasn't necessarily involved in that. I mean, you know, we end up kind of getting to know the managers and people within the club over a number of years. You build up a relationship, and like I said to you, it's not one of those things that happens overnight, but you've got to also respect the club to say, actually, yeah, we'll do the traditional press route, but also we'll do the fan press route. But I think for them to do an interview with, say, for example, with us, we've had loads of interviews. You know, Mark Warburton's given us interviews, you know, Matt Bed and the owners given us interviews. Uwe Roster called us up and said, I want you to interview us. So I think that they've got to trust you as a media source. So I think we've had a lot of trust because we've been going for such a long time. We're not going to necessarily, we're strong. I mean, if you listen to the podcast, like I said, prideofwest.london, we're strong. We ask strong questions. We don't pull any punches. But at the same time, we're also quite fair, and we try and keep it quite balanced. And I think, you know, we're not the Sun. So the Sun will go out and they'll absolutely kind of, you know, tear you apart if they need to. We'll ask the strong questions, but at the same time, we realise that we are Brentford fans and we've got the club at heart, but we don't shirk away. So fair play to the club for giving us this access. But also you could tell with the people that they employ. I mean, Brentford employ really good people. And Thomas Frank, you know, it started off when I met him at a B-team game and we were just chatting away at the B-team game. Then I met him a couple of months later and we were just talking football for an hour. You know, and his enthusiasm about the football and his knowledge, and then you say certain things, he sparks off that. And then he just said to me, do you want to come, can I come on your podcast? And it was just one of those things where, you know, it might not happen at Arsenal or Tottenham, because the problem that you get at clubs like this, I think sometimes, it gets too much. They get too worried. Everyone wants to control too many things. I know Brentford is probably getting like that to a certain extent. They think, oh, we don't want to get things out of hand. They try and control it. But the problem when you try and control it, you lose a bit of personality. And I think the fact that the club could do something like that, it kind of stamps the personality that Brentford's always been small, but it's still growing. It's forward thinking. And it's it reaches out to the fans.
Thomas Frank there was talking about also about the game coming up this weekend against Wigan, about how they're a side that pose different challenges. How a bigger challenge will it be, and what are the things to look out for Brentford heading into this game? Wigan are just kind of hovering just above the relegation zone, but what type of a challenge will they pose on Saturday?
Well, again, if you heard when Thomas was talking earlier, he said they're going to be a tough side. When we were chatting to him, he says, you know, in effect, they're kind of in a false position. They're a team. The way that Brentford operates a lot is that it's of course, naturally results are very important, but what they look at, they see whether or not teams are doing what they call the right thing. So if they're actually putting the balls into the right area and creating the right types of chances, okay? Because if they're doing that, if, for example, they had sort of Lacazette or somebody from Arsenal, fantastic striker, or you know, Son from Tottenham, creating those same at the end of those same chances when they put in the area, they put them in the back of the net. It's just because we're in the Championship, maybe the people that are finishing aren't as developed as a lot of these Premier League strikers. So they look at that and they've seen that, you know, I think that Wigan are doing a lot of the right type of things, but they haven't quite got the results that they're going to get. So he says it's going to be tough, it's going to be hard. They do things like put the ball into the area, they put the ball in the air. You know, they do a lot of set pieces, which are some things that traditionally we used to struggle a bit at. So we're going to have to work really hard in that game. And also there's a two or three key players, which he talked about on that podcast as well, from Wigan, who are going to be dangerous. Jamal Lowe, obviously, is one of them. Who scored quite a lot of goals in Division 1 last season. And there's also a player in midfield who I can't remember what his name was. Was his name Williams? He came from, not the Everton player. But yeah, and also there's a player in midfield who's their sort of kind of defensive midfielder, who is a live wire, very, very good player, and is somebody we're going to have to look out for. So we need to dominate the midfield when we go up there. So I think, if anything, maybe the Huddersfield game made us not complacent. We realised that we're going to have to work hard for every victory. The fact that the team is down the bottom means nothing whatsoever. We need to go out there and completely be on our A game to actually take Wigan out on Saturday.
And a quick fire prediction then, Billy, for Saturday's game?
Did I do a prediction on Saturday? I think I did, actually. I did a prediction. It's funny, we do predictions at the end of our podcast and everyone goes around always do a prediction. And I said to Thomas, yeah, no, we're not going to be so unpolite to ask you to do a prediction because that's not going to be fair. He goes, oh, what are you talking about? I'm going to do a prediction. So he actually said, I predict Brentford to win 2-1. I thought, cool, blimey, that's a bit bold. So he's predicted 2-1. I think I went for a tight 1-0 victory to the Bees just to sneak an away win.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Billy. That was Billy the Bee Grant from Besotted Pride of West London podcast and Brentford fan show. As we played a little bit from the interview they did at the pub with manager Thomas Frank, it's on the Besotted podcast, which you can hear on PrideOfWest.London. Part one is live now, and part two will be up on Wednesday the 13th. So great access that Brentford have given to Billy and his other podcasters to be able to have that access to just go down the pub and be able to talk to the manager. It's something you can't imagine with a top Premier League club. I mean, he even said Uwe Rosler, when he was in charge, called them to be on the podcast. I mean, it's an incredible story, but yeah, great things that Brentford are doing there to be able, because it's important that, especially in this modern day, that a manager has that connection with the fans. And if a manager is able to do that, to understand the city and the culture that he's going into, it just makes life so much easier. And it's great access that Brentford have given to Billy's podcast, the Besotted podcast, and also the Brentford fan show here on Love Sport, to be able to talk to the manager down the pub. I mean, it doesn't sound a lot better than that, does it, in football? Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, of course, on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be talking about Nottingham Forest a bit later in the hour, but up next, we'll be talking all things Swansea.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Swansea now. I'm delighted to say we are joined by Tom Coleman, sports writer at Wales Online. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Tom. It was a late 2-1 win at Wigan last weekend. Sam Surridge with the winning goal. It means it's back-to-back wins after beating Cardiff 1-0. After a little, very minor slump in form, Swansea back to winning ways over these last two games.
Yes. Hi, Kieran. It's as you say, it's been a welcome return to winning ways after what was a bit of a slump. That slump actually coming after Steve Cooper, one manager of the month. It's that sort of dreaded curse of that award striking again, I think. But, you know, they seem to be building up a bit of momentum. I think that Derby win was absolutely massive for them. And, yeah, OK, they perhaps rode their luck at times up at Wigan. You know, on another day, they may well have come away with nothing from that game, let alone for all 3 points. So, yeah, you know, they're riding their luck a little bit. I think Cooper feels a bit more confident in the blend he has in terms of the balance of the team. And, yeah, you know, I think the mood in the camp at the moment is very, very positive.
We've been talking actually just about Brentford and they've got Wigan away this weekend and they had on their podcast actually Thomas Frank, the manager, talking about the different challenges that Wigan pose. They may not necessarily be the most fearful side in the Championship, but they're a stubborn side, they're a difficult side to beat, especially away from home. Even though Swansea got a late winner, that must have been one of those games that it can easily be a banana skin and easily a game that you slip up on, but Swansea managed to find a way to win it.
Yeah, I mean, I actually said on our Swansea City podcast down here that I actually thought Wigan was going to be a tougher game than the Cardiff game, and I know that's an opinion that many Cardiff fans will probably be a little bit irritated at, but you know, as you say, they've got players that can hurt teams going forward, and you know, their form at home has been pretty good on the whole this season. So I mean, it's not a place we can go and really take anything for granted, as Swansea's rivals up the road found on the opening day of the season, of course. So yeah, I think whoever goes up there is going to find it tough, and I think you know, you saw Steve Cooper's reaction at the end when Surridge netted that late winner. I think that just shows, you know, just how tough it can be at the DW and how much how seriously he was taking it.
We've talked about obviously the big blow for Swansea that Joe Roden is out for 3 months, and it means that Ben Wilmot, who scored the winner against Cardiff in the Derby game, he will get a run of games at centre back. How good a player is he? Obviously, everyone kind of talks up Joe Roden. He's kind of made his international debut over the last few months. He's an up-and-coming young star for Swansea. But what do you make of Ben Wilmot? And are you confident that over these next few months, in the absence of Roden, this kind of, not necessarily the making of Ben Wilmot, but his opportunity now to try and push forward his career now?
Well, I mean, to be completely honest with you, with Roden being first choice up until now, I have to confess, I've not seen a massive amount of Ben Wilmot. And, you know, what I will say is, in light of Roden's injury, Steve Cooper has been, you know, giving some very glowing reports on him, saying that he's been pushing for a first-team start all season. We're only into November, but I mean, for these last couple of months that he's been pushing and really impressing in training and, you know, putting a fantastic performance. I mean, okay, he got the winning goal in the South Wales Derby, but I mean, looked very, very solid at the back. And, you know, I get the feeling Cooper himself is pretty confident that Wilmot can step up. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think losing Roden is a big blow. But, you know, I think the big worry a lot of Swansea fans have on the back of, you know, the last couple of games with Wilmot is, you know, are Watford perhaps going to come back in and take him back from his loan spell? I mean, I'm not too sure if there is a recall clause in there, but as we all know, Watford are not doing particularly well in the Premier League at the moment. And, yeah, it remains to be seen what will happen on that front. But I think Cooper's, as I've said before on your show, Kieran, you know, Cooper's taking it one game at a time, and I think he sees Wilmot as a more than capable deputy to fill in that Roden-shaped hole at the back.
It was interesting, Tom, to see that Steve Cooper had kept faith, actually, with a few of the more experienced players that had come in for that Derby game. Wayne Routledge and Nathan Dyer. Nathan Dyer scored on the weekend against Wigan. Are you surprised that he's kind of continued with them and the likes of Borja Baston, who I saw was on the bench in the game against Wigan? Are you surprised that maybe he's kept faith with those guys, or is that just going along with the fact that if you play well, then it doesn't matter kind of necessarily if someone scored more goals or got more assists than you, you're going to pick players on form?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think in the case of Dyer and Routledge, I mean, they were both superb in that South Wales derby. And I think when I spoke to you after that game, you know, we mentioned that, you know, players like that playing in games like that before, does that give them a sort of edge in terms of, you know, how they perform on the day or whatever. But I mean, whatever the reason was, they were absolutely excellent on the day. And I don't think you really could have dropped them for that game against Wigan. I mean, Routledge, as you say, getting on the score sheet again, showing once again that he still has something to offer this Swansea City side. And yeah, I think, you know, we've seen in the case of Baston, I think we've seen a sort of shift in how Cooper likes to balance the team in the final third. Andre Ayew has sort of moved from the wing to sort of play as an out-and-out striker. And I think the perception is at the moment on the back of these last two games about is perhaps his better position. Selina as well at the number 10 role. It's still, I think that's still a bit up in the air. I think Cooper may still try and slot him in out wide, but it remains to be seen in terms of Hills. But I think, you know, from day one, I think Cooper really has made it clear that, you know, if you put in the performances, if you put in the time and effort, you're always going to have a chance of knocking on the door and getting in that first team.
I believe, Tom, you've been present at Steve Cooper's press conference this afternoon. Were there any bits of team news that he brought out, and what were the sort of finer details of what he was talking about ahead of Swansea's game coming up this weekend, which is a significant one away at Sheffield Wednesday?
Well, I mean, there's not too much to report on the team news front, really. Joe Roden's operation's been a success. He's been around the training ground recently. So, you know, he's sort of in and around the setup, even if he's not really sort of in contention. As you say, he's out for the next couple of months or so. Aldo Kalulu's still out of contention too. Otherwise, it's more or less as you were in terms of team news. I think in terms of Sheffield Wednesday, I think there was a noticeable level of respect, I think, for Gary Monk. Gary Monk, of course, has some very, very strong ties here, both as a player and a manager, of course. And you know, the two of the members involved in the hierarchy at Swansea, Alan Tate and Leon Britton, both, of course, know Gary Monk very well. So I think there's a lot of respect there, a lot of respect for the job he's done at Sheffield Wednesday. I know it's going to be a tough game. Hillsborough has been a very, very difficult place for teams to go. I believe they're still unbeaten there under Monk. And I think they've kept three straight clean sheets there as well. And you know, when you consider the likes of Leeds and that have come to Hillsborough, that's a pretty decent record. So, you know, it's the same as it is with both weeks, I guess, Kieran, in the Championship. It's another tough game. He's obviously the P word, promotion, whenever you're back near the sort of top two or three or whatever, you know, that's always going to get mentioned. And, you know, I think that was put to him today, and he said, look, listen, it's not a banned word, but we are taking it one game at a time. And, you know, okay, from our point of view, that's a pretty boring line, but I guess from a Swansea perspective, it's good to know that the focus is being just kept on what's in front of them.
And just one final thing on that game. We spoke to a Wednesday guest yesterday on a Wednesday about the fact that Wednesday have struggled for wins actually against the bigger sides, against top half teams. They've beaten a lot of sides down in the bottom half, but maybe not quite got over the line and won. They drew 0-0 against Leeds a few weeks ago. Are we going to learn a huge amount about these two sides that are right up there in the Championship table, and both Swansea away from home and Sheffield Wednesday at home against another good side, that both sides have got an opportunity here to send out a bit of a statement to the rest of the Championship?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's the nature of the Championship, really, where these are the sort of games where, you know, if you want to sort of stamp your authority, I guess, on the division and perhaps pull away from the chasing pack, these are the sort of games that you've kind of got to be eyeing up in terms of in terms of at least a point, I would say. I mean, I don't think Swansea would complain too much if they came away with a draw from Hillsborough. You know, a point in the road you'd always take, I think. But as you say, I'm not sure it's going to be a sort of season defining fixture, but it's certainly a game that I think could well set the tone for the rest of the month heading into the international break. This is obviously the last game before then, and then you know, I believe it's three games in a week after that, so it's a very, very busy period. So setting the tone up in the right way for that busy period is going to be important, I think, because I mean, we all know that the festive program is a hugely defining time for any campaign, whether you're at the top or the bottom of the table, and sort of building up as much momentum as you possibly can before then is going to be important. But, you know, as I said, as you've said, Sheffield Wednesday, a very difficult place to go, and, you know, it'll be fascinating to see if Swansea can keep up what's been a superb away record.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Tom. That was Tom Coleman, sports writer at Wales Online. He was at Steve Cooper's press conference in the last couple of hours ahead of that game away at Sheffield Wednesday coming up this weekend. If you want to get in contact with us, of course, on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Up next, we'll be talking all things Nottingham Forest.
Love Sport.
So we're going to be talking all things Nottingham Forest now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Baz Cooper, journalist for the Nottingham Post. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Baz. After a couple of disappointing defeats and also a postponed game, Nottingham Forest did get back to winning ways away at Luton 2-1. How important was it for Sabri Lamouchi's side that they just found a way of winning a game after a couple of disappointing results?
Good afternoon, Kieran. Yeah, I think it was massive for Forest. I think it was massive for the manager as well. I think after two straight defeats, the last thing that anybody connected with the football club would have wanted to do is go into the Derby game on the back of three defeats in a row, if that's what it would have been. So I think huge confidence boost. I've just returned back from the City Ground doing pre-match press with Lamouchi and also Ben Watson, and they both spoke of the importance of that victory and how the mood in the camp is buoyant after that win. So yeah, I think it was huge.
It's crazy, isn't it, Baz, the championship this season? I mean, I could kind of bore people about the fact that between top and 17th, there are only 12 points, and how it is ludicrous that Forest, they have that game in hand because of the postponed game. They could go up to second. They were 10th, I think, before the weekend. They dropped about nine places after one or two defeats. Is it just a case for the manager in particular about just keeping, I know it's easier said than done, just keeping the players focused on the next game rather than being worried about the table? Because inevitably, over the next 2 months in particular, it is just going to keep toing and froing. You might go up four places, go down four places in a weekend, but it's just about focusing on your results. And in 2 or 3 months' time, the table will start to form a more reasonable look to it. And that's when you can start perhaps maybe taking a look at the table.
Yeah, I think we always used to say that 10 games was a fair yardstick of you know, once you get to 10 games, things start to settle down, teams start to plateau out and everybody finds their feet. Not in the Championship anymore. I think those days are long gone. We're 14 games into it, 15 for some. And, you know, it's difficult. We were talking about this at the City Ground earlier on this afternoon. It's difficult to say who's gonna go up. I still think West Brom are the team to beat. And they have probably the best squad in the division. They have a very, very, very good manager in Slaven Bilic. So I still think they're the ones that will eventually come through and probably start to leave the table, you know, come January, February time. But it's you're right. It's difficult not to bore people and keep saying things. But you have to. That's the reality of the piece. You look at the Championship table going into the weekend. Forest are fifth. Derby of 15, so there's 10 places below them, but yet there's 4 points that just separate them. So, you know, and again, perceptions are a funny thing, aren't they? Because everybody thinks that Derby haven't had the best start to the season. We know if we separate on the pitch from the chaos, the absolute chaos that's occurred off the field, on the pitch, you know, it's fair to say that Derby fans haven't been massively thrilled with their start under Philip Cocu, but yet they've won four games on the spin at home. Yes, their away form isn't great. They've not won away since Huddersfield, I think it was, on the opening day of the season. They've not lost too many. They're not winning many away from home. But the perception of their start to the season is not great. On the flip side, Forest's been hugely positive, but yet they're separated by 4 points, and that could be a point come 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. So it's just what you can't do is get. And it is a cliche, I'm aware of it, and managers and players always say this, but you can't get two up when you lose one, when you win one, sorry, and then you kind of get two down when you lose a couple. And Forest, in the last couple of weeks, have lost to Wigan and to Hull, but then they responded in terrific fashion at Luton, which was always going to be a very difficult game. So that shows they've got a bit of mentality about them, the right mentality, the ability to go and bounce back when they've lost the game. And this is going to be a season where probably most teams that are challenging for the top two or three places lose 6, 7, 8, possibly 10 games. You know, it's just ridiculous, and it's not going to get any easier.
Before we continue talking about that Derby game against Derby, some significant news off the field for Forest is the fact that planning applications should be submitted by the end of the year for a new stand at the Forest ground to take the capacity from around 30,000 to 38,000. How big is that for the club to potentially have quite a significant increase in the stadium's capacity?
Yeah, it's huge for the club, and it's been it's a topic that's been talked about for a long time. I think back to when Forest got relegated from the Championship, 15 years ago or so. The talk then was about a new stadium being built at Gamston or another location further down the Trent Embankment. That didn't happen. The City Ground, parts of it have fallen into disrepair. You know, the new owners are doing their best to keep it afloat. But the fact of the matter is that the club are way, way behind the likes of Leicester and Derby with their facilities, the ability to generate match day income, but more importantly, non-match day income. You know, there's not a lot that you can do at the City Ground away from a match day. And even on a match day, the facilities are hugely limited. So it is much needed. Forest need, the ground needs investment. I think the majority of supporters are probably happy that they are going to be staying on Trent side. That's a big thing for them. They retain the character and that unique location that's unrivaled in football, I think. So it is massive, but it's all about what happens on the pitch, though. And you know, the attendances have been great for the last couple of years. You know, this game has been sold out for Forest fans for over a month. They're averaging nearly 28,000 at home every week and achieved nearly that last season. So the fans are buying into it. There's a lot of positivity around the football club, and the development, when it eventually takes place, will be seismic for the club and for the city and for the area. You know, Nottingham is an area where it needs, you know, the more regeneration it can get, the better, the more investment it can get, the better. And Forest are one of the bright shining lights of the area, of the East Midlands. So it needs a stadium. If it wants to be in the Premier League, it needs to have a stadium that's fit for it, because at the minute, the main stand, which was built, I think, in 1967, after the previous one burned down, has had nothing done to it since, and it shows.
How much does the weekend's game, Baz, mean to you? And, well, I suppose to you specifically against Derby, it is a massive fixture. Whenever a Derby in any league comes around, it obviously creates a lot of hype and a lot of excitement. But for you personally, what does this game mean to you?
Well, I think you speak to any Forest supporter, for us as fans that work in the media, it is obviously a huge occasion. It's a great occasion as well. It's one that you want to enjoy it, because these are special games. You're playing against the team supported by, you know, your friends, your family, your loved ones. It's people you work with. It is bragging rights, but I think it goes above that for Forest and Derby. You know, you've got the Brian Clough Trophy on the line. Forest have won it for the last couple of games. They've got it seems to go in peaks and troughs, but Forest have got the Indian sign over Derby at the minute. But it is hugely important. But what we can't lose sight of is that this game is massive when both clubs are in mid-table, and it's probably been bigger for Forest in the last couple of years than it has been for Derby, because Forest have been struggling in the Championship. Last season aside, they've not really challenged at the top end for quite a while. So the Derby game was probably the best they had to look forward to, and trying to win that game was what meant the most. But I think it's a different situation now. Forest are challenging at the right end of the Championship. They want to get promoted. They're in with a shot of getting in the playoffs as it stands. So there are 3 points at stake. And while we all want Forest to beat Derby and to win and to retain the Brian Clough Trophy and keep that in the trophy cabinet and in the Peter Taylor stand, the 3 points for me are huge, because it keeps Forest. I mean, it sends them fourth. They got from fifth to fourth because of goal difference, because there's only three clubs on 28 points, Forest on 25. So it's hectic. And Forest, you've just got to keep winning to keep in there, because as we mentioned earlier on, a couple of defeats for Forest and suddenly you find yourself down at 15th like Derby are. So, you know, yes, bragging rights are important, and beating Derby is important in a game like this, but 3 points is huge going into the international break, huge.
And just a quick fire prediction then, Baz, how do you think the game's going to pan out?
My heart says that Forest will come through, because I genuinely believe that they've got better players. They're a better side than Derby. But my head says 2-2.
2-2. Should be an enthralling game. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Baz. That was Baz Cooper, journalist for the Nottingham Post. A huge game at the Forest Ground, which could be being increased in capacity given a modernisation, a regeneration of the stadium. A huge game, Nottingham Forest at home against Derby on the weekend.
This is Love Sport.